This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
You believe in magic?
I take it you do.
So will you trust me?
I'm going to show you something. Something that's going to make you look at everything differently. And when you see what I have in here, you're going to listen. You're going to believe every word I say.
Yeah, right.
Well, I hope you are listening to this new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Welcome back to the show, and also welcome back to our usual suspects, David Handlos. Good morning, or good afternoon. What time is it over there?
It is, man. It's about 12:20 here.
12:20. All right. And also joining us today, Deborah Shaben. Hey, Deborah.
Hey.
From which part of the universe are you calling in right now?
Smack dab in the middle of the United States. I'm in Florida. Yeah, in 2 weeks. I'll be in Florida.
Florida in the smack middle of the United States. Wait a minute. Nebraska.
We need to do a Where's Waldo podcast thing for you, I swear.
Oh, gosh. Well, everybody seems to get lost in Once Upon a Time world, so it's kind of fitting that we do too. But in good old Texas is joining us today, Lisa Jones. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Father.
Well, it's great to have you all on the show to discuss the new episode, Tallahassee. And, well, that's in Florida, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the capital of Florida.
Is it the capital of Florida? I thought Disney World was the capital of Florida.
You'd think, but no.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the episode, Tallahassee. Do they ever? No, they don't actually go to Tallahassee at all, right? It's mentioned all the time, but we don't get to see it. Instead,
it's
we
just
get
one of those unobtainable goals.
Or... Yeah, we get to see Vancouver instead, which, of course, for all our Canadian listeners, is just as good, if not better, than Tallahassee. But that's no here and there. we got plenty of things to talk about. As usual, we're going to skip the recap of the story because you all have seen it before. But I want to start first with our usual first round of reactions to this episode. Did you like it? Did you hate it? Did you thought it was meh? Or did you thought it was fabulous? Lisa, let's start with you. What do you think of this one?
I really enjoyed all the character development for Emma, getting to see what makes her tick and finding her love. I did not like the giant. I hate to say that. But
now, you didn't like the giant, or you didn't like the actor who portrayed the giant?
I love Jorge Garcia. I did. he was just did not fit the role for me. I can't picture him as mean. I'm sorry. It didn't work.
Well, he turned out to be not that mean. He was
just a
little bit angry.
But it almost came across as comical and over the top to me. In the, you know, when he first comes out storming. And I just, yeah, no.
It wasn't as menacing as I expected him to be either.
No, not
a big surprise, though, for all of us. I didn't think that we would see, you know, such an iconic character from Lost turning up here in Once Upon a Time, which is kind of a sister show anyway. And, well, I guess that they need some giant Mars bars or whatever he's chewing in Lost, the Apollo bars.
Apollo, yes,
they need
Apollo.
Giant size one for this guy to kind of keep in shape. What were your thoughts, Deborah?
I loved this episode more than any of the other ones of the season so far.
Wow. That's a big endorsement. Why?
Well, and the reason I think is because we're getting back to the original storyline, which is, you know, who's Henry's father and, you know, more about Emma and what happened to her in Tallahassee. And that's what I really wanted to know. So that's one thing that I was like, oh, yes, I finally got answers to a lot of the questions we had.
Nice. What about you, David?
Kind of the, I hate to repeat a little bit, but yeah, all these questions that have just been like thrown off to the side for forever. Like, okay, so now we get some backstory after putting in backstory that shows that Rumpelstiltskin is every bad character ever, and talking about everyone else, we finally get to see Emma. The one thing I was wondering towards the end of it is, well, she's always talked about, she's pretty good at telling when people are lying. Is this right around when she starts getting, I mean, gets all, get, you know, did she ever really have that? Or
you mean, is her assessment of the giant perhaps telling the truth, is that an affirmation that her powers are still intact, or is she losing it? Or
that's where I was going, because like, okay, this guy could crush me without thinking about it, I'll just let him go, because but she was completely unable to, you know, tell, like when Cora was lying to her and stuff like that previously, but she's still confident enough to say, okay, this guy isn't going to crush me now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what about Hook? Is she able to tell whether he's lying or not? Apparently not. She's confused.
Yeah, he's a big question mark to her, so she just decides to be cautious and trust the huge angry giant to keep her safe or something like that, but... it's she doesn't trust him at all.
Okay, well, there might be some reasons for that. We'll get to talk about that later on in the show. I really like this episode. The only thing that was a little bit distracting to me was just the bad quality overall of the special effects. I'm a bit of a special effects aficionado, and there was so much green screen in this one, and it was not very well done. The backgrounds were not keyed in very well, and it's the kind of same old cheap version of like big budget movie special effects. I understand that they are sometimes in a rush with these episodes, and that the special effects team is under a lot of pressure to deliver every week, but I feel that now that this series is such a success, I mean, give it a little bit of money, add some more people, and just give us a little bit higher grade special effects. Because this took me out of the story. I was constantly like, oh, I can totally see where the on-set beanstalk ends and where the painted one begins, and then the whole scenes in the castle with Jorge Garcia. I was like, yeah, that is... It looks like something terrible from the 90s or the 80s even. This was the kind of green screen stuff that they would do in my youth, which is like centuries ago. And it's a bit disappointing. I feel that this series deserves better. And I know that technology now can do better. So the only explanation that I have is that they are basically using the same procedures that they used in season one, and also the same studio probably, and the same amount of people and the same time pressure. And so I was like, come on, you know, up your game a little bit, use a little bit more CGI magic, because it takes me out of the story. That's the only complaint that I have. Further story wise, I thought it was really great. I love the fact that we finally kind of step away from the characters that are in every episode. I was so glad not to have Gold in this episode. And having a story that has a different villain for once, even though it is just this big giant Jorge Garcia, and a different setting. I also, for a moment, thought that this would be an episode without Henry, but all the way at the end we get to see Henry, which surprised me a little bit because the story really didn't need it that much. But I guess they wanted to just create a bit of a cliffhanger. And wrapping up that story with the candle and the dream catching and everything. I really love the way, and we're kind of starting to analyze the story right now. I love the way in which they portrayed young Emma. I don't know about you, but who was the first person that she made you think about? I was like, I totally know where they got this whole, you know, type of young Emma from. Who do you think she's modeled on? Any guesses?
No, but I was going to bring up something with Emma's wardrobe in this episode.
Uh-huh.
And somebody else caught this. I can't say that I caught this myself, but Emma is wearing clothes that Mary Margaret wore in season one.
I totally missed that. Mm-hmm. I missed it.
I think the dress that she's... the part where she's shoplifting,
mm-hmm.
that dress, Mary Margaret, I believe, wore that in season one.
Oh, wow. Fascinating.
That's interesting.
How would she get
that? I thought the coat looked familiar, but I thought maybe I'd just seen it.
Small budget for wardrobe too, apparently.
That could be the case. This could just be
You know, I did spend a good portion of that thinking, is that what people were wearing in 19... 19-
well, here,
you know, in 2001, is that what we were wearing?
Here's my theory. I think...
That would be 90s.
I think the character...
Well, right, but this was supposed to be... 11 years ago.
Yes.
So that's 01.
Yeah. Which would be early 2000, yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah, that's not what we were wearing back
Hold
then.
Hold on. I know someone who was wearing that, and I'm dying to say that. So I think Emma was completely... I'm going to mute you guys. I can't even say what I think.
That's the difference between Vancouver and Texas.
I think she was actually modeled on a very well-known singer-songwriter from Texas, by the way. I'll give you that. Lisa Loeb. I never know how to pronounce her name.
Glasses.
Exactly
yeah.
the same. Like very bright red lipstick, the thick glasses, but even the clothes, you know, the kind of girly, how do you call that? The skirts and everything is totally Lisa Loeb. I was expecting Emma actually to take out her guitar and start singing Stay. That was such funny. A spitting image of Lisa Loeb.
I thought of Taylor Swift just because that's the look she has right now with the pony, you know, the blonde ponytail with the bright red lipstick. And then there's a new commercial that's running, but she's wearing the glasses like that. And so I kept thinking of Taylor Swift.
Okay, well,
that wouldn't make any sense. But Lisa Loeb, I haven't thought of her in forever.
It was a no. Nobody has. I think she's still around. She still does music.
She is. She's from Dallas.
It's. I think the first CD that I bought when I visited my grandmother in San Francisco, and I heard that in a store, and I was like, what music is this? And so I bought that CD. That's kind of how I was like, oh, this got to be modeled on Lisa Loeb. And I thought it was very effective also in turning her into a younger version of herself. I thought I could hardly believe it was the same actress because it looked so different. And I was wondering also whether, you know, they just did the trick with the lipstick and the glasses, if that was enough, or whether there was some digital removal of wrinkles going on as well. Because I know that they have that technology. They use it all the time in the movies.
They didn't use it on her beau. They didn't use it on Neil.
That's true.
He looked a little old for like a 17-year-old girl.
But
didn't he?
For men, it's not as critical.
Well, maybe that's why they had to skimp on the budget for Jorge, because they had to spend it on her.
It's a lot of
this.
Wrinkle removal.
But, and then they had to stick with the special effects back from Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, or whatever.
Another trick is that she didn't frown at all in any of the scenes. And of course, if you frown, you see all the wrinkles. So perhaps it's just
nice.
Clever acting there.
That's funny.
Anyway, this is not a show about the analysis of makeup and then CGI. Let's talk about the story. So discover to our shock, at least I was shocked, that she was a thief. And I always thought that she was just, you know, cashing. She basically had a Rocky Balboa's job when we first meet her in season one. She's just going after people who don't pay, right? And here she's a thief. So I was like, wait a minute, what happened? And she meets this other guy. What's his name? Not Sean, but Neil. Neil Cassidy. Mm-hmm. And turns out that he was the guy who stole that yellow beetle. And together they turn into... And actually, I was like, this reminds me of the famous, you know, criminal couple. And I was thinking of... what's that movie? Where they start to murder everyone at one point and it gets totally out of hand.
Oh, Natural Born Killers.
Natural Born Killers. Yes. But then I think they themselves refer to Bonnie and Clyde, which of course also a classic couple, criminal couple. But it was very, very funny. The thing that confused me a little bit is that they were switching a lot back and forth between that timeline and then what happens in the fairy tale world, or at least on, you know, near the beanstalk. So it took me a while to realize when this was taking place, and that you know, this was probably the earliest Emma that we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. No, technically, remember there was a flashback with Pinocchio as a baby.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But there's still a big gap that needs to be filled. So this was still quite early. Now, people in the chat room are also commenting that this is the 28th episode of the show, and 28 is an important number for Emma. I didn't know that. And I wonder what exactly that meaning is, 28.
It's the year they said that when your Rumpelstiltskin told Snow that when she, Emma, when your baby is 28, she will come back to you.
There you go.
Break the curse. So that was her 28th birthday when Henry showed up in her dorm. Remember, she had the little sad little cupcake with the candle in it.
Oh, true. Yes, you're right. You're right.
Knock, knock, knock.
And that's when things started to come apart. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And 28 minus 11 is 17. So, yeah, she's supposed to be 17 years old there.
That took me a minute to realize she was supposed to be quite that young. But
yeah, I thought she might have been early 20s. But okay, never mind.
I had to do a little math there. You know, it was funny, though, watching her with the stealing and the way she was living like that. It made me think about when we met her, her job was a bounty hunter. And that made perfect sense. Because, of course, she knows how to find people because she did the same thing. You know, she lived on the lam and ran from the, you know, authorities and that kind of stuff. So, of course, she knows. She's been through the system. So.
Well, and it is a little bit like what we see Snow do in the first season. Her mom, too, was kind of like very, very sneaky and was stealing a couple of things, the keychain, you know.
Mm-hmm. They have a lot more in common than we
think so, too. So I really like that, how they kind of tied it into the story of, and it's all about Emma and Snow and the whole tension. I love what they did here, character-wise, mm-hmm. with the two. Let's talk about Snow and Mulan and Emma and Hook and Aurora. They're standing underneath that big beanstalk, and then what struck me was what they say about that beanstalk, and it was a bit puzzling. Emma says, that's kind of freakier than I remember from the story. So apparently Emma has read Henry's book, or at least part of it.
Or maybe meant the story of Jack and the Beanstalk.
Just like we remember it.
Yeah. And, right.
Yeah, and she even... just points out a couple of elements from the original story of Jack and the Beanstalk, and to which Hook says, "Well, charming story, but you know, it's a lot worse than that." the thing that struck me, and I still don't understand exactly the lines here. Mulan says, "This reminds me of death," and then immediately afterwards, Snow says, "Encouraging." I was like, "Wait a minute, what?" Reminds me of death? Why would a beanstalk remind Mulan of death? And why would Snow say that this is encouraging? Or is she just being cynical? I don't know. Any ideas? Any theories? Crickets.
I don't think I caught that originally.
Okay.
I was trying to go back to think about what, you know, it's like, what in her storyline would have caught... No, I can't think of anything.
The only thing that I can imagine is that at one point we are in front of the big castle up in the skies. And, well, we see the remains of that big war that has been going on between the giants. And there are two statues of giants in front of the entrance to the castle.
No, they're not giants. Did you see what they were?
No.
You're right.
They're terracotta warriors.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought either these are small giants. No. That's, I wrote it down. I was about to say that, but I should mute you guys. I was like, the thing that struck me is like, wow, they wear these Mongolian armor suits, suits of armor. And it's exactly the type of armor that Mulan is also wearing. So was Mulan's people...
Her story tied up in this.
Yeah, were they somehow involved in this whole war among the giants? But even the terracotta warriors are gigantic. I mean, I just came back from China and they're pretty big. They're much bigger than I am. But then once we see the Jorge giant, and they're actually pretty small. So
I wonder if this means that they're opening a door. You know what? You know them. They don't put these things there by mistake.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there is some tie between the giant world and Mulan's story that we're gonna.
Can there be something going on between the giants and Mulan's people, and that these warriors that we see in front of the door are hybrids? They're like the Hagrids of Once Upon a Time, not entirely a giant, but kind of a half giant. I don't know. There might be more to this story, though. According to the chat room, Jorge has already said that he will be back in later episodes. I hope I'm not spoiling anything. But yeah, and of course the chat room is complaining that we didn't hear him say dude.
And that we didn't?
No.
I just thought that we didn't, did we?
No, we didn't. He should have said, like, dude.
Giants shouldn't say dude. That's not in the fairy tale.
No, but whenever we see Jorge, he needs to say dude.
Dude.
at least we got the Apollo bars.
They should have given him a number. I mean, really, just say a number.
A number?
You know?
Oh, like the numbers. Oh, gosh.
it's just a number, like a combination lock. I mean, they just should have given him a string of numbers to say, just for fun. I'm just saying.
Or fee, fi, fo, dude, and see what happens.
But, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So I thought that line that Mulan says reminds me of death has to do with something that we will see later on in the story. And we haven't had any backstory for Mulan so far. So I'm wondering, what's she even doing there? And then Snow is perhaps just being cynical. Oh, that's encouraging, you know, a beanstalk that goes all the way up in the skies. Now, Emma is vaguely remembers the original story of Jack and the Beanstalk. I have it here in front of me as brought to us by Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. That rhymes, by the way. So Jack and the Beanstalk is an English folktale. The tale is closely associated with the tale of Jack the Giant Killer. And later on, they use that name for Jack. And he's known under a number of versions. The first appearance in print is from 1807, and it was popularized later on in 1842 and 1890. So there are different versions of this story. The main plot is Jack is a young lad living with his widowed mother. Their only means of income is a cow, which Emma mentions. When this cow stops giving milk, one morning Jack is sent to the market to sell it. On the way to the market, he meets an old man who offers to give him magic beans in exchange for the cow. Jack takes the beans, but when he arrives home without money, his mother becomes furious and throws the beans out of the window and sends Jack to bed without supper. As Jack sleeps, the bean grows into a gigantic beanstalk. Jack climbs the beanstalk and arrives in a land high up in the sky, where he follows a road to a house which is the home of a giant. He enters the house and asks the giant's wife for food. She gives him food, but the giant returns and senses that a human is nearby and sings, "Fee, fi, fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman. Be he live or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread." So that's where we get the idea from, that the giants can smell blood. However, Jack is hidden by the giant's wife and overhears the giant counting his money. Jack steals a bag of gold coins as he makes his escape down the beanstalk. Then he repeats his journey up the beanstalk two more times. Each time he's helped by the increasing suspicious wife of the giant and narrowly escapes with one of the giant's treasures. The second time he steals a hen which laid golden eggs, and the third time a magical harp that played by itself. Kind of a prototype iPod. This time he is almost caught by the giant who follows him down the beanstalk. Jack calls his mother for an axe and chops the beanstalk down, killing the giant. The end of the story has Jack and his mother living happily ever after with their new riches. Well, it's quite a different story from what we see here, and definitely not the happily ever after ending, at least not for the giant so far. And certainly not for Jack, because we discover that he's been killed. The strange thing is that Hook tells us that the giants actually used the magic beans to plunder the land. But I was like, okay, so how? How do you do that? How do you use magic beans to plunder the land? Is that something that I'm just not creative enough to come up with a way in which they do that? Or is this something we're going to see later on? What are your thoughts? Is there any
Crickets.
Well, hey, we're here to help people think about this stuff. We've got 6,200 people now that are waiting for, you know, for Deborah's explanation of, oh, this is totally a reference to a obscure Disney
movie
from 1855.
Yeah, well, I don't actually. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, as far as obscure Disney movies, I actually kind of got a Cape of Wonders feel for most of the giant.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it was also there was this reference to the wishes, or the I'm going to grant you one thing, and then she's bargaining, and I'm like, I want two things. So that looked like the bargaining with the blue genie, in a way. So according to the chat room, the giants used the beans to travel and steal treasures from other lands and other realms. That's possible.
That's
yes.
What they said. That's what they said in the show, is that the magic beans were used as portals, and that they went. I think Hook gave us that while they were walking around looking at the treasure, and they went and sold the treasure. I guess like a pirate would. You know, I mean, they went and stole treasure and brought it back.
You jump in and jump out real quickly, thanks to the beans.
Yeah, and then when they were defeated, except for this one Jorge giant. They destroyed all of the beans so that they wouldn't work anymore.
Right.
And that's why she was looking at that one bean and she said, does it work? And I don't know. It makes you wonder if there's still beans out there. Because we saw the beans. We've seen them used twice before.
Mm-hmm.
Once where Rumpelstiltskin sent Balefire, right? And then we saw it used with Hook to go to Neverland.
But that was all in the past. And of course, if there was a big box full of magic beans, that wouldn't create much tension in the story now, would it?
Yeah. Right. So that's... No, I just wonder if we might find one again.
Perhaps. Or some other magic might be necessary to open up the portal in the final episode of season two, because you know that's when they are going back or try to go back. Anyway,
that's right.
There's an interesting reference to the Wizard of Oz at one point, and that is, of course, the magic powder made of poppies that is going to be used to knock out the giant. Mm-hmm. That is, of course, a straight reference to the poppy field in the story of the Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy and her company are trying to get to the other side, and then they get overwhelmed by all those drugs, because that's basically what it is, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if this is an insider's joke from Hollywood, like, oh yeah, all those famous actors like Jorge, and they're all, you know, using drugs. They're all passed out on all these opiates. But I definitely reference to The Wizard of Oz, which again makes me wonder, are we going to see more of The Wizard of Oz? Is there some Wizard of Oz master plan behind this? And I've got some other reasons to think that, but that's later on in this story. Hook makes his reference to the tick-tock, the clock, and of course the watches later on also refer to time and ticking clocks and ticking watches and the preciousness of time. I love the little scene between Emma and Hook, where Hook, you know, needs his hook, basically, because he can't climb with one hand. And then, did you notice what she does? Once he screws on the hook, she puts her handbag on it. Did you see that? I thought it was hilarious. He uses, basically, Hook as a hook lid. Hook for her bag. That was another shocker. I really thought that she was pregnant in that scene where they go in that store.
I did too. Yeah. Like, oh,
I thought, wow, we jumped, you know?
I was like, that's quick. But it was just a bag. And but anyway, she turns out to be pregnant in prison anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Without Neil knowing, probably, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, is that he doesn't know.
No.
Yeah, we don't get the impression that he knew. Well, we don't know if he knew where she was, because what's-his-face just told him she was in prison, but he wouldn't say where.
Yeah.
So he probably didn't tell him about the baby thing.
No, and that might be another big reveal or like big plot element later on in this season.
Season finale.
Well, or perhaps worse, if he discovers that she has been pregnant, that he has a son, he's going to be very resentful towards Pinocchio. So I can see a big, you know, clash between Pinocchio and whoever Neil might be, might turn
out to
that
be. Would be interesting, because we know that Neil knows the curse is broken, right? Because we now found out about the postcard.
Yeah.
So what if he goes to Storybrooke looking for her? She's, of course, not there. And he finds out about Henry and Pinocchio's there, which we don't know where Pinocchio is at the moment, but he's somewhere.
Well, he's somewhere in Storybrooke because he can't leave, remember?
Right, but we haven't seen him yet. So that could be interesting to set that up, to have this whole thing going on while she's still in fairy tale world.
Yeah, and Henry's out there. So what's going to happen? And then, of course, Henry now has a substitute father, which is charming. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen when Neil enters the scene and is like, you basically get the same tension that we had in season one between Emma and Regina. About, you know, who owns Henry. They might actually do a mirror image of that with the fathers now. It's like we've got a grandfather Charming, and then we've got this Neil dude. And then, of course, Henry doesn't know doesn't know his father, doesn't know that his mother has been in prison,
he did, because he remember does. The newspaper?
Oh, he does. Okay.
He found out he was born in jail. Remember,
true.
That was
true.
Was that episode? Desperate Souls, where she was running for sheriff.
Okay.
And Sidney Glass, you know, dug up her dirt.
And that's, of course, why she needs to be in jail for 11 months, because then he can be born in jail. Makes sense. Let's see. The keychain scene was interesting as well. He steals her a keychain with a little swan on it and asks Pinocchio to bring that to her.
Is it a swan? I thought it was a compass.
No, it's a swan.
It's a tiny little swan. Okay. And that was kind of nice, because he calls her Swan all the time. Doesn't call her by her first name, but by her last name, Swan. And then Neil Cassady, of course, whenever we've got a new character popping up, I'm doing some research on the names.
And this one was a very obvious choice for a name.
Why? Well, actually, I know Neil. Well, Cassady is obvious, but Neil means something like cloud or champion. I couldn't really figure it out. Inge, our producer, did some research about the name and says this is short for Cornelius in Irish. And that means in Latin, the horned one. So something with cornu. Could also and Cassady is another Gaelic name, which, according to my findings, means basically a descendant of Kyside, which is a town, I suppose. But Inge found out that could also mean clever or curly-haired. So if that means curly-haired, could he be Balefire? Because he had curly hair.
Could be Peter Pan.
Balefire means evil or great fire. Is that, could that be a connection with a dream where there's, you know, people are speaking of fire? It's kind of vague, but of course I think that the last name refers to, and you were about to say that as well, it refers to
it's a real person.
Yeah.
Cassady. And the Cassady. Lost people have already used him twice or once before. They used the same name and they referenced it in Lost, and then he was an inspiration for the main character in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which we know they've already referenced before also. It follows. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I say Cassady's life, I mean, he was involved in petty crime. He's arrested for car theft, for shoplifting, for car theft, fencing. I mean, it just kind of follows the character. And then it's got a, he was an early hippie. He was an inspiration for Jack Kerouac's novels. He is responsible for the jazz rapping that was called Beatnik. I mean, it's a, I guess, well-known, I didn't really know how well-known until I looked it up, but
Right.
I mean, the early hippies, you know?
I totally missed that there was an alias name for Ben Linus, the big bad guy from Lost. That's awesome.
Yeah, Dean Morty was the name of this passport, which is a character that was based on Cassidy in one of,
Once Upon, On the Road, Jack Kerouac.
Yeah, on the road. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he hides the watches near the train station. So if Butch Cassidy was a train robber, that makes sense that he's in. You know, it's all about trains. Let's go back to where we are. The Dreamcatcher. It's kind of interesting that we get an explanation for this Dreamcatcher, which we've seen in his apartment in the first episode of the second season. And I don't know if it's for us as viewers that it's re-explained again by Emma, but I thought it was a bit weird that as an American, he doesn't know what a dream catcher is. I mean, that I don't know what a dream catcher is normal because I'm from Europe, so I had never seen such a device. But apparently this is quite common knowledge in the U.S., isn't it?
I think it depends on what part of the country you're in.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, not every part of the United States has a very vivid Native American culture attached to it.
Okay. Is this from like Native American culture?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that. And he calls it a flypaper for nightmares. I thought that was a brilliant kind of definition. Flypaper for nightmares. And then we get this whole talk about where they want to go, where to settle. And Emma actually asks, where do we settle? Neverland? Or is it Neil who says that? But they mentioned
Neverland. She says it.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, well, mm-hmm. That's an odd plant right there in the middle of the script.
True.
But then what happens next is also, I think, a reference to Peter Pan, because Neil tells her to close her eyes and point. And, well, that made me think of what Peter Pan tells the kids, if you close your eyes and think about something you really want, you'll fly. So it's basically the beginning of a journey. Just close your eyes and imagine where you really want to be, and that will, you know, put you into motion. So it's all about this goal. Where are we going? We're not just living from day to day, but what is our destiny ultimately? Which is, I think, the biggest question of this episode. It's all about, what is your destiny? Where are you supposed to end up? And they first think it's Tallahassee, but it turns out that Emma has a different destiny. And they might end up in Tallahassee at the end of the series. Who knows?
Well, and I think that they showed us a preview from last season, or a reminder, mm-hmm. that Regina said Tallahassee was the only place she'd stayed in for very long, and she'd been there for 2 years. And Regina says, what was so special about Tallahassee?
Yeah. Well, now we know.
Yes. Yeah. Got out of jail and got the car, and I guess that's where she went to look for him.
Right.
Yep.
So I did think it was interesting that they really showed, I mean, this really gave motivation to Emma's character, this whole arc of falling in love. And I mean, it made you not wonder why she is the way she is, between the parents abandoning her thing. But then this, I mean, this was really an important, influential time period in her life.
Yeah, absolutely.
That he left.
Hey, can I make another reference to the time or the dream catcher? Just,
yes, absolutely.
And it's something I saw out of the corner of my eye, and I meant to go back and look at it again. When Hook is climbing up the beanstalk, he has the satchel.
Yes.
It's a leather satchel, and there's a dream catcher symbol looking thing branded on it.
Oh, really? Uh-huh.
I wanted to go back and just make sure I saw what I saw, but it looked like it. It might be something you picked up in Neverland, you know, from the princess there. From
Interesting. Well, and isn't that what Hook tries to do? Is destroy the dreams of all these kids from Neverland? In a way,
well, he just tries to get Peter Pan.
Yeah, but he wants to destroy Peter Pan's dream of flying, and you know, just in a way, isn't that a dream catcher? Isn't that the metaphor for what Hook does, destroying the dreams of all these kids? I don't know. Perhaps I'm just trying to read too much.
No,
into
but
it.
Hook has been an interesting bad guy. I mean, he's not our typical kind of bad guy. He's more of a devious, charming, you know, kind of bad guy, and it
Yeah.
I guess I really want to see more of him because I don't know where they're going with it.
So
that intrigues me to know what his role is in all of this.
The thing that the writers make us wonder, as much as, you know, Emma and Snow, is can he be trusted? Is he telling the truth? Is he still in Korra's camp, which I think is the case, and he's just playing a game? Or is he just super pragmatic and is like, whoever gets me to my destination first, I'll go with him?
I think that's what he is. I don't think he's in anybody's camp. Yeah.
He's not in his own camp.
Well, that's true. He's a bit the Han Solo character of Once Upon a Time. You know, I'm in it for myself. I don't care about the Force. I don't care about magic. I just want to go.
Well, I want to get my revenge, and you get me there, and I'm good.
Well, it's just like Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's not like he was on anybody's side. He was just out for himself. So maybe they kind of gave him that element of Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Yeah. But it's kind of nice not to see him just be this big bad evil guy, you know. I mean, it's nice to see the complexity to him because it makes you want to, I don't know. And he's kind of cute. And there was some chemistry going on with him and Emma, I thought, climbing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially from his side, because in the later on in the castle or in the treasure room of the giant, there's this tripwire scene and he's like, oh, finally. finally got it. Why did you
I felt like they were making it. I mean, that's the most she's opened up just about to anybody. And it felt like they were making some sort of connection there, climbing the beanstalk. I don't know. I hate to say this, I liked her scenes with Hook almost better. It's like they had almost more connection than she did with Neil.
Well, but in a way, and this is interesting, there is some attraction, but it's almost because they are so similar. Did you notice that when Emma is arrested and she shows that watch to the police officer, we see that there is a tattoo on her wrist of a small flower. Did you notice that?
Uh-uh.
And then earlier in this episode, she notices the tattoo on Hook's arm and asks, you know, who is that? And then he's like, well, you're very perceptive for someone who has never loved someone before. And there's another reference to. So the both of them have lost the person that they loved, and the both of them have tattoos. So I think that there's more of an attraction of because they're so similar. But I'm not sure if it's a romantic tension. At least I don't think I still think that Emma kind of mourns the loss of Neil, and so I'm not sure if she's open for a another love in her life.
No, but I definitely think it was some sort of spark.
Well, I think she did spark with him, and that's exactly why she chained him up, because the last guy that she sparked with ended up putting her in jail. So there's the moment she felt a spark, she's like, okay, we're going to nip this one in the bud.
Well, you got to remember the last guy she hooked up with died.
That's true. That's true.
He was kissing her.
Yeah. So not the best track record.
That's true. She always seems to lose what she loves, and perhaps that's why she can't love.
Well, and she was interested in, don't forget Pinocchio, August. Remember, they had some chemistry going too. So I don't know. She's got her choices.
She still seems to be quite reserved all the time, but
she's still very vulnerable and got that wall, you know, around her to protect herself. But I like it. I actually liked her and Hook together. I thought that was nice.
So you think they'll hook up? Okay, never mind. According to the chat room, Emma already has the tattoo before she gets arrested. We saw this tattoo a few times in the first season, and Jennifer Morrison has said the tattoo has an important meaning. So perhaps it's just the way in which the writers want to remind us of this tattoo and that there is more to this. I personally think just seeing the context in which they show the tattoo here and that we see a tattoo on Hook's arm, I think this tattoo has to do with Neil and that it's just something of their past that we haven't seen yet. That's just my 2 cents here, or my two golden coins. Speaking of which, the golden coins, let's move over to the castle in the clouds. So does this mean that there is just one building in the clouds, or is there an entire country? How does that work? I mean, I've seen these like flying rocks in Avatar on other planets, but I've only seen blue skies in our world, so it's kind of interesting. And where do all these giants come from? And why do they live in the skies?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't have an answer to this, but it's mysterious.
This is why they're going to bring them back, so they can do the giant back story.
I hope that we're going to see a little bit more of these giants. I bet you we.
And
are.
And the giants, I guess, are different than the ogres. So why don't the giants and the ogres just fight and get it over with?
We'll see. So the whole scene with the Jorge giant, some interesting details there. We stumble upon the Jack, the giant killer, who turns out to be killed himself, and then Emma makes a kind of derisive remark about the sword. It's like it's a toothpick. And at first I didn't understand it. It's like, well, you had exactly the same kind of sword when you were fighting that dragon. But now at the end of the episode, I figured, of course, it's in reference to the giant. It's kind of small to kill a giant with a toothpick. And that's, but later on we get the explanation that, Jorge is so afraid of, do we ever get his name, by the way? Or is he just a giant?
He's a giant.
Well, anyway, Jorge is afraid of the toothpick because it's been dipped in some poison or magic or whatever. So interesting. The treasure was again CGI effects, not that good. Even the shaking when the giant approaches is a bit feels a bit Star Trek to me. It's like they're not even shaking the camera; they're just doing it digitally, and it didn't look very convincing. And then his roar is like roar, and then later on when he's Jorge is like, oh hello, I'm a dragon, I'm a giant, and I have a very high pitched voice, and I'm not at all menacing.
that didn't work for me, because it I don't know, because he plays such a good, warm character so well,
yeah,
that the whole I'm big scary guy, it didn't work. It seemed kind of cartoonish.
He's always been big, but not in this way.
Yeah.
Well, no, but I think that sets the stage for his further character development, for seeing giants as, like he was trying to gain sympathy. And I bought into it. I have to admit, bought into it.
The end of course, his story is that, it's actually a lot different from the tales that are being told on Earth, and it turns out that in one way or another, and we don't know that yet, it's actually the giants that were the victim of this whole struggle over the magic beans.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the way he made it sound. So
yeah, he said very interesting, of course, and very true. That history is written by the victors. That's mm-hmm. what he says, and it's what you always hear. That's the problem with history. It's never totally objective. So, there's a bit of a tragic nature to his character. And if he's back in future episodes, I guess we will get to explore this a lot more. And perhaps then what he plays here is put into perspective and makes more sense. Let's talk about that nightmare, because down below, underneath the beanstalk, Aurora wants to sleep, and Snow is like, yeah, sure, you go ahead, I'll watch you. And then she looks at the beanstalk and is like, she's not going to watch Aurora. She's going to climb up the beanstalk and save her daughter. But no, actually, she is. Actually, she does what she says she will do. She's watching Aurora, and Aurora wakes up. She's very upset, and she's had a dream, and the dream is very similar to the nightmare that Henry gets at the end of the episode. Now, our producer, Inge, has put the two accounts of this dream together in one sound clip. So let's listen to that and discuss it briefly.
It was just a dream.
It was horrible.
Why don't you tell me about it? Do you want to tell me about it? Come on, let's stand. Tell me.
It was the same as last time. I was in this room, this red room. It was bright, blood-red curtains. There was no windows or doors, so it didn't make sense, and I couldn't get in or out. I was trapped. The curtains, they were on fire. It was horrible.
It's okay.
I was hunched in the corner, and I looked over into the other corner. And in the shadows, there was someone else there. I could just see his eyes. He was looking right at me.
I was in this room. And it was red. And there was no doors, no windows, and these curtains. And they were on fire. It was in this corner. And it was looking out. And there was someone else there. She was staring at me through the flames. Then I woke up and...
Don't worry, all right? It was just a bad dream.
Or was it? Actually, we learn that these nightmares are the result of a sleeping curse. And, of course, Aurora has been under the sleeping curse for many centuries, I suppose. Henry also was under the sleeping curse when he took a bite out of that apple strudel thing. What was it?
It was part of that same apple that Snow ate.
And that's why Snow also has been under this curse and was suffering from the same nightmares. Mm-hmm. But it's very intriguing that both Aurora and Henry are seeing the same nightmare, and that Charming is the one who lights a candle to kind of like catch that. But the candle, I suppose, is the fairy tale equivalent of a dream catcher, and tries to appease Henry. But what about this dream? What are they seeing? What is this red room and fiery curtains? They're trapped. Their eyes there that are looking at them. What is this? Any ideas? Any theories? Don't give me crickets now. I want to hear your thoughts about this. What about you, David?
Well, I wonder if their nightmares are linked. So it seems like I wonder if these two are going to end up being connected somehow. And it'd be kind of cool if they could somehow, bridge the gap between the two worlds somehow.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if the dream is a commonly shared reality that they tap into when they fall asleep, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Matrix,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. The Matrix world. What about you, Lisa?
Well, I had the same thought that David did originally, and then I started looking around online, and I did not watch Twin Peaks. I will say that up front.
Me neither.
But looking online, everyone's saying this is an exact replica of a Twin Peaks dream that was a recurring theme in the show.
Really?
And so I've been reading about it, and description.
Go ahead.
Oh, did you watch Twin Peaks?
Oh, just. Just a little bit, just enough to know that if they end up in the Black Lodge, I'm going to lose it.
That's what this talks about. There's no doors. There's a set of red curtains. I mean, it just people end up there. It's just this whole, it started off as a dream sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm familiar enough with Twin Peaks to know it was really weird.
All right.
But I don't know the meaning of it.
Well, I've not seen the Twin Peaks. I think I've seen the pilot episode at the time, and we didn't have cable at TV, so I've never watched it. But it's kind of an iconic series.
Connection between these writers?
No, there isn't.
And David Lynch. So,
there isn't.
The only thing is that, in a way,
it could have been an homage because Twin Peaks, in a way, was very. Innovative in that it kind of established this kind of television that we're watching and enjoying so much nowadays. It was this big sequential television series with a huge underlying mythology, and then the X-Files kind of did the same. And nowadays, almost every TV series has that. What about you, Deborah?
Yeah, so maybe that's all it is. I mean, maybe they use that.
No, I think there's more to it, but I first want to hear what Deborah thinks about this. Is this refer to anything we've seen in Disney movies? I mean, there are lots of flames and scary, flaming situations, but any ideas?
No, my first thought was that what they're seeing is kind of like Korra, maybe a precognition of what Korra is planning to do and possibly planning to kidnap, certain people, and this is their prison. But I think they're looking, somebody else brought it up in the chat room, they might be looking at each other. Like Henry might be seeing Aurora in the corner, and Aurora might be seeing Henry in the corner.
Because Henry actually talks about a she is watching
me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Something with mirrors.
Yeah.
I like that theory. I like it a lot.
I do like the idea that maybe they can communicate here. That would be really interesting for the show.
But we don't know
anything about Sleeping Beauty. So, now I'm fascinated to know something about her.
Aurora says he and Henry says she. I think you're onto something.
Well, and the red kind of reminds me of Wonderland. I'm like, is there going to be some kidnapping to different realities such as Wonderland? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I want to add another element to the mix. And if this is what they're aiming at, then it points at a very fascinating kind of big crescendo and a, I don't know, something huge at the end of this season. I actually think that this might be another reference to The Wizard of Oz. I'm not discounting the other theories, but perhaps they're blending this together. Because we all know, of course, that The Wizard of Oz is not a wizard at all. He is just a man, literally, of smoke and mirrors. I remember the mirrors. And he is the man behind the curtain. And when they finally get to Oz, the big reveal, of course, is that this Wizard of Oz tries to trick them into believing that he's super powerful and that he's just this huge wizard. But he's using basically special effects to make that happen. Now, one of the encounters, because Dorothy gets to meet the Wizard of Oz, gets to talk to the Wizard of Oz several times. Actually, she requests an audience with this Pope of the wizard world, and every time he conjures up a different room in which he tries to impress her. And so I don't remember all the situations, but I do remember that there's one time that she gets to go face to face with the Wizard of Oz, and there's this big fire and there's smoke and there's this huge face that stares at her in between two big columns of fire. And of course, we ultimately learn that that face is just, you know, fakery. It's just, something he constructed. And that ultimately it is the man behind the mirror that's looking at her. And so I'm thinking, what if they take this story? And we've seen so many references already to The Wizard of Oz that this season is propelling us towards some kind of happening inside the Wizard of Oz world where we get this confrontation, we get to see this fire, these fiery columns, the curtains that are on fire. This could be, you know, the final revelation of who this wizard is or whatever. And smoke and mirrors, and that the mirrors are the cause that actually Henry sees Aurora, and Aurora sees Henry, and there might be other people in that room, and it gets very confusing, and there's one mastermind behind the scenes, and it might be Cora, who knows, it might be Gold, and they are actually the puppet masters that are manipulating all the others. We've seen some hints at that there will be a Tin Man who's looking for his heart. There might be someone else who's looking for courage. What is the Scarecrow looking for?
Brains.
So I just got the very strong feeling that this is another reference to The Wizard of Oz. And there's one more hint in this episode. Could be a hint. But again, I might be seeing things, and I'd love to hear our audience's feedback on this. Did you notice the belt that Pinocchio or August wears when he talks?
Oh, with the turquoise in it.
There is a green emerald thing in there, a stone.
No, I thought it was turquoise.
Is it turquoise?
I thought it was more bluish to me.
To me, it looked super green.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, is this from The Wizard of Oz? Is this some kind of... I don't know. I thought it was a gem. Mm. I thought it was emerald, but I don't know.
I thought it was turquoise, but then, yeah.
And could the quest for brains next to a heart and courage indicate that we will get to see zombies?
Brains, might be
pushing
yeah.
it a little bit too much, but anyway, wow. that's my theory. We'll get to see not zombies, but we'll get to see Oz, and this whole vision, this nightmare, has to do with that Wizard of Oz scene, and that someone is behind the curtains here manipulating everything, and I can only think of two people that could fulfill that role, and it's either Cora, or it's Gold, or it's some kind of concoction of combination of the two.
Well, we haven't seen, and I know that people in the chat room are getting anxious to go on to the next topic, but it could be the Queen of Hearts.
That could be too, that they mix the Queen of Hearts and Oz.
Maybe.
The Witch of Oz.
Yeah, we haven't seen the, yeah.
We've heard about the red slippers in the previous episode, and Gold is looking for them, so I don't know. That might actually be the last thing they need to get back. Oh, that's it! That's it!
That's how they're getting home?
That's how they're getting home! Because what is the big quest of the Wizard of Oz? It's, of course, Dorothy trying to get home.
Right.
They need, and that's going to be the final episode. It's going to be this big finale in a Wizard of Oz type of story where they need the red slippers or whatever. And it turns out, oh, and who is the wizard? Who is the Wizard of Oz type manipulator behind the scenes that wants to go back or wants to go to Storybrooke?
Hook.
No, Cora.
Cora.
Oh. Cora is looking for the portal. So Cora is going to be the Wizard of Oz. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Let's talk about the box. What's in the box? I played the little clip at the beginning of the episode. We see this encounter between August and Neil, and August is very adamant that you can't stay with Emma. If you really love her, you want her to reach her destiny, and that destiny is not Tallahassee. I'm sorry, that destiny does not include you. And hey, I'm going to show you something in the little box that I have on my motorbike all the time. And once you've seen that, you'll understand and you'll listen to everything I say. Now, what's in that box?
Schrodinger's cat. I don't know.
Wasn't it the typewriter? I mean, that's...
Possibly. Well, there's a couple different theories about that going around.
Okay.
Yeah. One of them, you could say there are typewriters in there, but that wouldn't be all that magical of an experience of understanding. But you could also say, some people would say that it could be something to jar memory from Neil, that he might be either Baal or Peter Pan, that there's an artifact from Neverland or from somewhere else that'll say, this is who you are. Yeah. Or, yeah, who knows?
You could have found the used up bean or something.
But then, okay, I have a twofold problem with this. One, I think my thought is it's Rumpel's dagger. And
why?
If he's Balefire, he knows what that means. So he wants to find his father.
True,
and he knows his father and the power. And
good
point. He would, you know, that would be enough for him. But then the second question is, if it's something from fairy tale world or, you know, like any of those things we just said, how in the world does August know who he is?
Who is?
Who Neil is.
Who Neil is. Oh.
Right, because August left, I mean, as Pinocchio, as a child, I mean,
but
he just walks up to a random stranger and says, here's something from magic and you're going to believe magic? I mean, that's kind of random.
But August is a writer and he knows these fairy tale stories, so perhaps he knows a lot about Balefire, but Balefire doesn't know anything about August.
Well, right, so maybe if Neil is Balefire or Peter Pan, then August would have to know who he is. I mean, that's the thing. He would have to. And we do know that August knows the stories because he was editing the book, remember?
Yes, yes. The thing is that if you see something like that, I mean, would your reaction be like, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, so what do I do? I was like, how on earth did you get that picture of my father's dagger and tell me more and where is he and I want to know now? And it's like, okay, whatever. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
you're
like,
right.
Okay, cool.
Well, and the thing is August said, let me tell you a story, and then he cuts from that. So we don't know what story he precisely told Neil. We don't know if he told him, hey, this is who you are, and this is who Emma is, and this is what you got to do.
And again, a normal person just goes, oh, okay, sure.
Oh, yeah, you're sure.
Yeah, I love her to death. Yeah, I want to be with her. But no, you're right.
Yeah, you're right. Perhaps
oh, you're right. Yeah, there's a
living, but no, you're good. I'm really a good person.
I'm thinking it's just a photo of the writers of the episode with a little balloon that says, just do what the script says. Whatever he says.
I know. It's crazy. Someone in the chat room, I don't know if you just saw this, but they said that what if, because it was always the typewriter in Storybrooke,
yes,
right?
Yes.
They said, what if it was the typewriter, but it only looked like a typewriter, Emma, because she didn't believe in magic, but it was actually something else. Just like August's wooden leg, Emma couldn't see it.
That would be a bit too convoluted, I think, too complicated.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that, you know, actually I thought I saw the typewriter, but perhaps I just thought I saw it. But I was like, well, what if there's just a piece of paper with a few lines that say something about Neil's past? Because, of course, we don't know what Neil knows about his past. And that it's just so convincing that, oh, yeah, Pinocchio clearly knows, or this August guy knows so much about me, then I have to trust him.
This is what the writers do so well. They answer a couple of questions, like give us some of Emma's backstory, and we're all, yay, we love it. And at the same time, they open up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
You know, they tell us who the stranger is from the very first episode of the season. And then they confuse us with, holy cow. So wait, what?
Yes. It's pretty genius.
They are. I really love it. So, okay. Someone I saw on the internet, it's not my thing, but I saw it. And they said that the box that he shows him is the same box that Jefferson used, in Hat Trick in the other world to put the white rabbit doll for his daughter.
Oh.
So I haven't gone back to watch it to see if what they said is true. But because I know you had talked about White Rabbit. I mean, remember we spent a whole long time talking about the White Rabbit in that first when we saw Neil.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. I don't know how it all goes together. But I like the idea still of Neil being Balefire, who is Peter Pan. I'm still going with that one.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. And I don't think it's a rabbit, though. If you put a rabbit in a box like that for multiple hours on the back of a motorbike, you'd get in trouble. And that rabbit would probably jump off as soon as, you know, you open the box. So, or perhaps it's a dead red. Let's not go there.
But how excited were you to see August? I
didn't even recognize him. I was like, who was that again?
I was like, yeah, and he was staying true to Pinocchio. Remember how he said, this world holds a lot of temptation and I'm not doing really good at this. I loved seeing him again.
Well, and it's funny to see that Pinocchio or August becomes kind of the Jiminy Cricket to Emma. He needs to protect Emma's mission and Emma's destiny, just as Jiminy Cricket tried to protect Pinocchio from all those temptations and all the evil. And from what I've heard, a lot of people are very upset about August and what he does here. It is kind of harsh. I mean, it's very tragic what happens here, because August knows the bigger picture and knows that Emma can't, you know, she has to fulfill her vocation, her mission. And Neil is in the way here. But, and then, yeah, he gets the money and the key cards and the little, the necklace with the swan on it. And Emma doesn't get the money. So does that make him a thief, or is that just part of him knowing that if he would give her, what was it, $20,000?
Well, you can't send money to jail.
Right. Yeah. I got to open this up in front of you. Yeah. Oh, here's $20,000. Here you go, girl. You go shopping now.
In jail. Here you go.
Well, maybe that's part of August saying about his temptation. He tries really hard, but he just can't quite, you know, he gave her the car, but he
gave her
the
a
money
car that's
himself.
Worth something, right?
Yeah, an old.
So I think, you know, August does this for a purpose, so I don't understand why people are so mad with him. It's sad, but it's kind of the way things go. It's the sacrifice of the hero.
Yep.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people complaining about the fact that, who can't be together? Oh, Dreamy and the Blue Fairy can't be together. Whatever.
Those two.
But the thing, yeah, but I think everybody likes the idea of true love, and how dare somebody stand in the way of true love, you know?
Well,
no metal.
Wait, now that I think of it, and the chat room reminds me of this, perhaps Pinocchio/August did make a morally wrong choice by keeping the money, because he sends the car keys to Emma from Phuket?
Or Phuket.
He's in Thailand, and we know, of course, that August later on in the story he's had kind of a life of debauchery. Is that how do you pronounce that? Debauchery.
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 Yes.
And so he's kind of the lost son who returns and has remorse. So perhaps he did spend all the money.
He went and had fun. He took that money and ran.
But he doesn't come across as a swindler here or someone who is trying to play Neil or, you know, to steal the money. Not at all. So the creators have said apparently that August took the $20,000 out of greed. Now I'm a bit disappointed.
But that falls in line with Pinocchio's character, though. I mean, the temptation. He's a good person at heart, but he just can't quite walk the straight and narrow.
And perhaps the room with the fire is actually everybody burning Pinocchio? Could that be? Fireworks.
My kids kept saying, if that's Pinocchio, they've missed a whole lot of episodes. They've watched the first part of the first season. Now they're watching second season. They've missed the whole Pinocchio thing. So I kept saying, this is Pinocchio and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, so is his nose going to grow? And I'm like, no, I don't think. I mean, maybe. I'm like, I don't think so. Yeah, I'm having a hard time with the kids right now because they've only seen through Desperate Souls.
That must be very, very confusing. But it's very confusing. In a way, August is a kind of a gray character. He's not, I mean, he does the right thing in protecting Emma's destiny and thereby also doing his part in saving the world. But at the same time, he fell for the temptation of all that money, and it detracted him from perhaps his own mission, and so Emma is reaching her destiny, and he almost failed to reach his destiny. But fortunately, he converted, and
I have another question that just comes to mind. And okay, so we know that Emma had Henry in while she was in jail. Do you think that somehow August brokered Emma's baby to Storybrooke, that August had a hand in Henry going to Regina?
Well, Gold, they said last season, Regina said that Gold brought her the baby. So
that's what I mean.
How would they know? You know, how would Gold know where?
They would have had to do it without meeting. Though, because when Gold met August for the first time, they, you know, there was the whole shock and like, oh, you're my son. Da, da, da. So, I mean, if he did do it, they would have had to like not meet and be.
That's true. But perhaps August did, you know, brought Gold in connection with Emma? No, with Henry? I'm getting confused.
What? August did say that he'd been to Storybrooke before, remember?
Yeah.
So he could have dropped him off on a doorstep.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, it's kind of the Moses thing. Just put the child in a basket and run away on your
motorbike.
Because
without Henry to bring back, how are we going to get Emma back without Henry?
Mm-hmm.
So it could have all been brokered.
Very cool. Now, according to one of our chat room people, on the poster, the wanted poster, which I tried to decipher, but the version that I watched was too blurry. According to the poster, it says that Neil had a scar on his left arm from a knife wound, and he may be in possession of stolen firearms. So there might be more to Neil as well. But Peter Pan apparently had a knife wound. I don't know. Could he be Peter Pan? Interesting. Those might be clues or not. Let me play a clip of the postcard thing.
I was able to fence the watches. Don't judge, I'm giving it all to her. In the car. I got a clean VIN number for it, so it's legit. I feel like I'm there with her, you know?
Money's not what she needs, not for what's ahead.
Can you just see that she gets it?
Sure.
And one more thing. If anything changes, she does her job, this insanity ends, she's free.
I'll send you a postcard.
Yeah, and that's the postcard that he gets in the beginning of the episode via a dove, right? A bird. Doesn't the bird bring him the card?
Yes.
Some magic working there. And of course, Emma doesn't know Neil is in this predicament and that he actually still loves her and that he's now looking for her. So Neil is on the one side and Emma is lost on the other side. So perhaps Neil might have an heroic role to play in somehow bringing her back as well. I don't know. Now, several people are looking for Emma. Charming is looking for Snow. Henry wants his mother back. There's a lot of people that could be instrumental in kind of creating the bridge between these two realities. According to the chat room, by the way, August denies ever having been in Storybrooke before. So I don't know about that. And then, of course, since Emma doesn't know, she feels betrayed by Neil, left alone. Again, she's been left alone by so many people, by her mother, her father. She's been an orphan. She's been abandoned by Neil. So no wonder that she doesn't trust, or she can't afford to trust Hook. It's not that she can't. She's just afraid that if she trusts again, that trust is going to be is going to make her hurt again, and so she can't take the chance that she's wrong about Hook.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Okay, I can't.
Emma, look at me. Have I told you a lie? I brought you here. I risked my own safety to help you. The compass is in your hand. Why do this to me now?
I can't take a chance that I'm wrong about you.
So, sounded pretty genuine to me, Hook here. I mean, he wasn't like, oh, yeah, you just go ahead and I'll be okay. No, he seems really distraught and disappointed in Emma because he thought they had a thing, right? Mm-hmm. What I'm wondering is what is going to happen to him? Because he's still stuck there. And any
she
ideas
said
about
the giant was giving her, what, 10 hours?
Yeah, it's a head start. But since the giant is going to be back and Jorge is going to be at least a recurrent character once, is there going to be something more happening? Because he's been trying to steal that treasure all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, could there be a little bit more plot development up there? And then he perhaps, you know, steals the goose with the golden eggs or the heart or both? That'd be fun.
Oh, that's interesting. Goose with the golden egg.
Why not? Hmm. It's
throw that in there at the same time.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Snow and Mulan at the bottom with the chopping down the beanstalk.
That was
pretty a really powerful,
intense
scene to me. You know, especially when Emma comes back and they have that confrontation. It was almost like they finally reached an understanding between them and a real connection between Emma and Snow.
Because Snow was afraid that she would lose Emma forever. Mm-hmm. And so the reunion kind of forged a much stronger bond than ever before. And and Mulan was behaving a bit like a soldier, which she is. It's like, okay, you want me to do that? I'll do that.
And I think it helped Emma earn some respect from Mulan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because her asking her, you know, showing that she understands what she's doing and going into it with her eyes open and this is what you have to do. And so I think Mulan being the warrior, you know, she finally is respecting Emma a little bit more.
Yeah.
As being there. And poor Aurora, that poor child just needs something to do.
Yeah. At first I didn't like her that much, but you start to feel sorry for her. And I wonder, why is she there in the story? Because she's just like being distraught and having nightmares, but
that's the thing. She's there to have nightmares, apparently.
There's got to be more to her story.
Sleeping Beauty is there to sleep.
They're gonna give her a storyline eventually. I hope.
What I liked in this episode was that she was willing to sacrifice herself. She's like, I've lost everything. You know, let me go. You know you have your son, you know, and you've got Henry, you've got your daughter, and just let me go. What do I have to lose? So there's kind of a bit of a suicidal type of attitude towards her. So it's like, you know, I have nothing to live for anymore. So I wonder if her story arc will involve having something to live for again, perhaps a prince.
Possibly she could find another prince
or a donkey.
A donkey.
Sorry.
wrong. This is Disney, not Universal.
I apologize. Let me quickly play a clip. from the prison.
You got mail. Know anyone in Phuket? I've got to open this in front of you. Those are the rules. Hey, look. Car keys. Hope you got the car it goes with. Nothing else, no letter, sorry. But good news. You get a car when you get out. And a baby. Congratulations.
Wow. And a baby. And I wonder, will we see more of that in prison, or is just this just the only thing we'll get to see of this? I don't think there's much to tell about that whole prison, you know, these 11 months in prison. I think this was just here to establish that, that's how it all came about, that Henry was born in prison. But I don't think that we'll go back there. Well, before we wrap up the show, let's take a quick look at the comments on our blog and listen to what our listeners have to say. All right, first reactions, and we've decided to put all the spoilerish reactions in one blog post, under one blog post, and we're going to do this in the future as well, because we know that we have visitors from all over the world, literally, and in some countries, this show is only airing its first season right now, so we don't want to, you know, spoil too much, although it's always a bit risky to go to any Once Upon a Time website nowadays. At least our, the comments that give away what happens in the episode, we put that in one kind of post with a spoiler warning. So here's what Melanie writes. This was right after the episode was on TV. Crazy initial reaction theory. Aurora and Henry are having the same dreams. Could they be seeing each other in their dreams? If so, could communication between worlds be possible via their dreams? Now, that we've been talking about that as well. I love that idea of that that could be a bridge, that the dream world and that the whole dream catcher and the candle actually are more than just a way to reassure them. The dream catcher devices might actually be communication devices if they somehow know how to replicate those dreams or whatever, catch them or open up a road through the dreams. A bit it sounds a bit Matrix like, but then again, so are the doors, you know, the doors to all these different realities. Then Darlene writes, I was thinking the same thing. There must be something other than the typewriter that Neil saw to actually leave Emma hanging. I'm still wondering what it was. But, oh, and this is actually, I'm reading this backwards. No, actually, this is posted 18 minutes after the first remark. Rumpel's dagger is definitely a great guess. And what is this with Hook? I still can't read his character. Either he's nice or not. Tough one, but glad Emma thinks he's not. Henry and Aurora, it is highly possible that they are communicating in their dreams. Inge, our producer, writes, I'm wondering why Aurora, what is the connection between Aurora and the Snow White and Prince Charming family? I have no idea. I don't think there is a connection.
No, because Snow didn't know her.
No. But perhaps, well, JMO in the chat room says perhaps Snow sees herself in Aurora. So there is a little bit in Aurora that she
it's a
recognizes.
Princess connection.
Yeah.
Having to grow
there you
fast.
Go. and then Nani is definitely our listener who is most upset with August. I am terribly angry with caps. Pinocchio! August! I really would like that giant to rip off his limbs and beat him upside the head with him. He stole the money that Neil wanted Emma to have when she needed it most. Maybe she could have kept Henry if she had had all those dollars. Instead, the selfish woodhead ran off to Phuket with the money. Who is he to decide that she had to give up everything so she could save Emma and what's F stand for? E or F or FTL, all those fans use all these acronyms. I'm getting so confused.
Fairy Tale Land.
Fairy Tale Land, what's F? F? EF?
She could save EF.
I don't know. I'm confused. Anyway, let's continue to rant here. It was not his call with guardian angels like him. Who needs enemies? Anybody have a match? Nani.
I think she's really upset.
Selfish woodhead. That is a great one. It's almost like you scruffy looking nerf herder.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it. More comments like that on our blog, please. onceuponatime.sqpn.com. And then Andy is a lot more, you know, relaxed and quiet. And Andy writes, I don't necessarily think he stole the money. I think he held it for her to get out so it wouldn't look suspicious to the police. That's what I thought. I don't think it's fair to jump to the conclusion that he stole it. She does wind up living in fairy tale land, so maybe she does get the money. Want to know if... I would like to know what was in August box, though. Yeah, but, well, since the writers have said he stole the money out of greed, I do believe that there is some cause for concern. I don't know if I would light him up with a match, but I think Pinocchio needs another chance. You know, he deserves another chance. And then Melissa writes, the ones affected by the sleep curse are having the same nightmare. So, yeah, that's kind of what we all think as well. Well, great feedback. Keep it coming. We love the discussions, and now that there are so many people listening to the show, it's becoming more fun every week. And I can't wait to hear your feedback on that whole Wizard of Oz thing. What is going to happen? You know, I want to know. We're trying to stay spoiler free, but as long as this has not been revealed by, you know, teaser trailers, I welcome your speculation on the blog. Again, it's Once Upon a Time. SQPN.com. And with that, we've come to the end of this episode. Any final thoughts, dear panel members? Lisa? Anything we haven't mentioned or anything you want to mention?
Okay, one more Lost reference. There was an episode in Lost entitled The Man from Tallahassee.
Oh.
Of course. That, yeah, perfect.
There we go.
What about you, David? Anything to add?
Well, I still really want to know what's in that box. That would answer too. A lot of questions.
It is a typewriter box, so I think it's just a typewriter with a piece of paper on which something significant is written. But anyway, that would be boring, wouldn't it? Yeah. What about you, Deborah? Final thoughts?
Final thoughts? I just can't wait to see what they're going to do next week because I want to see more about... Who is Neil and why did he end up in New York and what's he been doing? I kind of want to know it all.
Me too. Well, as Daniel from the Once podcast mentions in the chat room, we'll probably have to wait until Christmas to open the box. No shaking. And with that, we say goodbye. Thank you for listening. See you next week here on The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.